ready? Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the February 4th session of the Portland City Council, the afternoon session. It's July somewhere, but not here. Could you call the roll? I think Commissioner Fish will be joining us, but the others of us are here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. We've got a staff presentation coming shortly and some invited testimony, and then I obviously quite a few people here that are interested in discussing the West Quadrant Plan. I want to thank everyone in the community and in the city, the city's organizations, both the Planning Bureau and others, for the work so far and for a lot of amazing volunteer effort by members of our Planning and Sustainability Commission, some of whom we will hear from today. The focal point of our city and the focal point of a lot of our planning over the last 40 years, and this is a really pivotal piece of work. So I'm looking forward to the discussion and to the presentation. We're going to hear, as I said, a staff presentation followed by at least one member of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, or no, it looks like two of them, and from our county commissioner, Commissioner Jules Bailey, who represents this district, and then we'll take public testimony. Because of the number of people that are here, we're going to try to hold public testimony to a two-minute oral statement. I know that's hard, but we've got at least 50 people signed up. So if you can be succinct, please do. Remember that we're also going to hold the record open so that you can submit written testimony, and we do actually read those written testimony pieces that we receive, so you can follow up if you can't get all of your points across in this afternoon's hearing. So again, our goal is to get everyone heard. On that subject, by the way, if you're here representing yourself, you just need to give us your name. If you're here representing a neighborhood organization or some other, obviously let us know that. If you're here as a paid lobbyist, you need to disclose that under our city code. And we try to respect all points of view in this room. So if you agree with someone and want to give some sort of sign of that, please feel free to give them a thumbs up or a wave of the hand. And obviously, the reverse is true if you really feel like you need to do that. But we ask that we not make verbal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens' points of view in this room so that we, as your council, get to hear them all. So those are the rules of the proceeding. I'll keep it at that and get started with Susan Anderson coming forward and along with the rest of her team. And I also, while I do that, want to call on my colleague, Commissioner Saltzman, who has some particular points about the housing elements of this plan.
Well, thank you, Mayor. At the outset of this hearing, I wanted to highlight an important part of this resolution that should provide some context for the testimony ahead. I know we'll hear about height issues in the central city, as well as transportation and sustainability challenges, but my goal here today as the Portland Housing Commissioner is to make sure that we take some bold and vigorous steps to make sure that we provide for affordable housing in our central city, and to do so in a way that will prevent our city from turning into a San Francisco where people on either end of the income scale can live, where you're either very rich or you're very poor, but nowhere in the middle. And my goal, as well as that of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, as they expressed in their deliberations on this quadrant plan, West Quadrant Plan, is to see that the central city accommodates people of affordable housing stock for people in the 0 to 80% of median income range. And that's something I very much agree with, but I also recognize that we lack the financial resources to make that happen, and we need to be creative and engage in some creative thinking for policy tools that will enable us to get there. And I know that both the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff, as well as the Portland Housing Bureau staff, the mayor's staff, and my staff, and the city council has signed off on coming up with incentives for height or FAR allowances that are tied directly into creation of more affordable housing stock within the city, either creation of the affordable housing directly by whomever is developing the property, or by paying into a housing investment fund for an amount to be determined that will help us in turn generate that affordable housing stock. So this is a very crucial issue. It permeates the West Quadrant Plan. It'll permeate the Central City Comprehensive Plan when it finally gets to us someday. But I just want to let people know now, because they can address this issue, that there is language in this resolution, and I'll read that language right there, that talks about developing a substantive affordable housing bonus program. In the resolution, it says, be it further resolved, the City Council instructs the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Portland Housing Bureau to include a workable affordable housing bonus for City Council consideration and implementing code for the final Central City 2035 plan. So this is really a daunting challenge, but it's a challenge I know that this council is up for. I know we all recognize the need for more affordable housing, as does our Planning and Sustainability Commission, but we need to actualize, we need to activate the tools that will get us there beyond simply urban renewal money or federal government money or other sources at our disposal. So we need to be creative, and we're going to be serious and creative about that in the West Quadrant and the Central City Plan.
Right. Thank you. Thanks very much. So let me see if there are any other my council colleagues that want to say anything at the outset before we get started. And if not, then I'll get you, Carla, to read the item, and we'll start the staff presentation.
Item 145, adopt the West Quadrant Plan as direction for updating the Central City Plan.
Thank you very much. Director Anderson.
Great. Good afternoon, Council Mayor. Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me here today is Joe Zender, our Chief Planner, and Carl Lyle, who is a Senior Planner and has been the Project Manager on this project. So as you know, we're updating the Central City Plan. Because of the size of the plan and the importance of it, we do this once in a generation. It's been 27 years since we've had a new Central City Plan. We broke the plan into manageable pieces. So we broke it into north, northeast, the entire west side, and then also southeast. 2 years ago, we completed the Central City, the overall concept plan, and the north, northeast quadrant. Today, we will review for you the highlights of the West Side and the West Quadrant Plan. And in a few months, right on the tail of this, we'll bring in the Southeast Quadrant Plan. At each stage, Council adopts the quadrant plans only by resolution, not by ordinance. When the Southeast Quadrant Plan is done, we will compile all the pieces together and at that time develop the appropriate zoning that goes along, the zoning code changes that are necessary to implement the plan. To match it. And then we'll come back to you with the entire package, including the code, and you'll adopt all of that by ordinance. So it's important to me, anyways, to note that this plan absolutely builds on the success of the 1988 plan. The 88 plan led to the development of a lot of things that we just take for granted, whether it's South Waterfront, whether it's the Pearl District, whether it's the thousands of units of housing that are now in our vibrant downtown, and it retained important industrial areas. And it also continues to position Portland as the regional center for innovation, for education, and for exchange. This slide shows what we call the big picture plans. So again, it's not something we do every year. It's something we do every 25 or 30 years from the Portland plan. Then comes out the comprehensive plan and then the Central City plan. We anticipate that you will adopt the new comprehensive plan this year. And then the Central City plan will follow with all of its components right after. It will be the first major zoning code package and plan amendment that's based on the new comprehensive plan. So for today, our goal is just for you to hear about the West Quadrant plan, to understand, to be able to ask questions. We have a few invited speakers, Andre Baugh, who is the chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, Catherine Schultz, who was one of the co-chairs of the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, and then we'll have testimony, as the mayor indicated. Again, the request for today is to listen, have a discussion, and then to adopt a resolution either today or in a couple of weeks to adopt this West Side plan. If there aren't any questions about the timeline, then I will turn it over to Joe to do the presentation.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Joe. Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. Today we're here to talk about the West Quadrant of the Central City, and it includes all of the Central City west of the Willamette, from Pearl District in the north to South Waterfront in the south to Goose Hollow in the west. The Central City 2035, or CC 2035, updates the 1988 Central City Plan, which was based on the 1972 downtown plan. And the good news is that we found that we can build on the soundness and success of these plans, and that many of the actions that are recommended in CC 2035 are to address issues that still remain from those plans. So we're following through. It retains the role of the Central City as the economic hub of the region. It calls for more mixed use because we've seen the success of mixed use development in the Central City to produce jobs and housing, and it stays the track with more residential development. The Central City Plan update also looked at the unique role of the Central City in the region and really in the state. It is our most intensely developed center. It is a place that serves and benefits the entire city and region, especially as an employment, cultural, and civic center. Also, in our new comprehensive plan, staying with a more dense and intensely developed central city allows us to keep neighborhood centers and our corridor development at a scale that really works better in those settings while we still meet our overall economic vitality and create great places. By 2035, the city overall is expected to grow by 122,000 households and 140,000 jobs. The West Quadrant share is 23,000 more households, which almost doubles the amount of residential development in the Central City, and about 31,000 more jobs on top of the 130,000 jobs that are already in the whole Central City. The West Quadrant plan was developed over a year and a half with extensive public involvement and oversight by a 30-person steering committee, and full details on all of our public involvement and outreach is in Appendix F of the document that was submitted to you. And early in the process of developing this plan, we focused on some community charrettes for Goose Hollow, for Chinatown, and for the riverfront, for places where we thought we needed focused attention before we all dived in to really be able to understand community intent in those places. So here's what's actually in the plan document that you received. It includes additions to the Central City-wide policies that you all adopt in 2012. So as we did this plan, we found some of the direction that we were getting when we looked at the West Quadrant was really relevant to the whole city, so we've made those amendments. And then for each of the seven districts that make up the West Quadrant, you have goals, policy, implementing actions in great detail. This plan covers a lot of topics, as you can see from that outline of the report and what's in it. And this stakeholder advisory committee worked through all the details of all of those topics. And in the end, they really wanted us to emphasize the plan also has big ideas. Part of the market distinction of this plan that they thought was worthy was the product of the time they devoted to. And I just want to give you two examples to illustrate. First, Waterfront Park and the waterfront. As people looked out to 2035, there was still clear love and commitment for the west side of the water and the waterfront park. This was a signature idea from the 72 plan, and it's still a core element of the West Quadrant. The public was very interested in implementing the ideas in our current Waterfront Park plan. They were interested in updating that plan as well. And the West Quadrant added ideas that complement the goals of for the waterfront, including finding ways to bring more activity along NATO Parkway, to bring more people and activity to the park on a day-to-day basis, to improve access to the river itself while enhancing habitat within the river, and to promote more year-round activity. Another big idea in the plan is called the Green Loop. And so the Green Loop, think of it as a 10-mile urban promenade for walking and biking that invites people to experience Portland Central City in an entirely new way. It's an idea that complements our transit, bike, waterfront path, and street network. It links the east side and the west side. That's a longstanding goal of our Central City planning. It links Central City destinations in a new way. It would be a different kind of recreational destination, kind of an urban trek through the city, safe, green, active, vibrant, and fun for all ages and ability. That's the Green Loop. There are a lot of ideas and issues and goals in Central City 2035. However, we know from the testimony we've received and from what Planning and Sustainability Commission heard that the maximum height limits in the Central City are a big item of focus and concern. So right now I'd like to just take a moment to give you a little background on how we manage height and building mass in the Central City. So in the Central City, height is regulated by a specific map in the zoning code. And it's a fairly detailed map, and it includes not just the zoning for the heights related to how much intensity different parts of the central city are developed, but also has our view corridor analyses. And so that's where you're seeing a lot of the detail that shows up in that map. As we talk about height, there's a few background pieces I want to make sure you're aware of. First, to understand our approach to height in the central city, you need to understand our uniquely fine-grained block pattern. In our central city, 40% of the central city area is in public right-of-way because we have these fabulous 200 by 200 foot blocks. That's why the central city seems so walkable, but it also is why it can be difficult to develop at an urban scale in our central city. Because we have these 200 by 200 foot blocks, you don't necessarily perceive the canyons of tall buildings that you see in other cities or that you perceive there, because if you're a pedestrian, every 100 feet, you're never more than 100 feet from a street intersection, which is kind of a window to light and air. But as I said, it also creates challenges for the development of the parcels. Second background fact is that our zoning uses a combination of floor area and height to manage the scale of buildings. And what floor area is the amount of development that you can build on a particular site. And that's a separate map and a ratio that's in the zoning code. And the principle is this, is that the same amount of floor area can produce a single height building over an entire block that's shorter, or if it goes taller, it can squeeze that amount of development onto just a section of the site. And this opens up some flexibility for these difficult to develop sites in the central city, as I was referring to. It creates the opportunity, and we see this all over our central city, of mixing scales of buildings. It creates opportunities to preserve smaller buildings because the development potential for the whole block can be arranged on just part of the block. It could creates the opportunity for open space and plazas. So that combination of floor area and height is an essential part of our system. Third background fact is that floor area, height is not the only way that we affect the success of our buildings in the central city. If you need to pay attention to what happens on the ground plane in the public realm, and we have design review, we have zoning code standards, and we have pedestrian design standards that really take a look at that ground floor, which is where most of us experience the central city to begin with. It's where we get the perception of it as a vibrant, as comfortable, a safe place, and we really understand there the scale. You put those ingredients together, that's how you have successful urban design in the central city. So those are elements that I just wanted to make sure you're aware of. And then there's the principles that we've been using since the 80s to allocate height across the central city. And the first of these principles is that where we have our most intense development, we have taller heights. And in our city, that's in our commercial core in our downtown. And basically the way the pattern works is that the heights and the intensity of development sort of tapers down as you move away from that commercial core. The commercial core and the transit mall have been where we focused that over the years. We have places that require special attention, and we step down to those to preserve light and air, and those are our parks and open spaces and waterfront, and you'll see that in the zoning map, and you'll see that in our proposal. We step down to protect view corridors, for instance, from Washington Park to Mount Hood. Those are built into how we allocate height, and we put lower heights on our adopted historic districts to match the character and what we're trying to accomplish those. We also, as you look at a map of the overall central city, taper down the heights and intensity of development as you get to the edges of the central city and make the transition into our single-family neighborhoods. And the Planning and Sustainability Commission was particularly interested in this, in this plan, was that additional height and additional floor area ratio should come in return for a public benefit. So they've asked us, where we are talking about height or FAR in this, to consider it as part of a bonus system, which we intend to bring back to you when we bring back the full plan. Okay. So within the plan that you're looking at today, it proposes a limited set of height increases as well as a few height reductions. But on the whole, We have not changed height in the central city. We have not changed FAR in a significant way. On this map, you're seeing the places circled. The yellows are places where we've bumped up heights. The blues are places where we've reduced them. You can see a circle around much of the Pearl District where we're allowing more heights there. But this illustrates a principle that you see in play in a lot of the plan. The community supported greater heights there. But the way you access those greater heights is that you transfer development rights off of smaller historic and or character buildings. So in the Pearl, that mix of big and small is something they value, and if we can create an economic value for that, it benefits the ability to preserve those smaller buildings. So that's what was reflected in our recommendation for the Pearl, and we did a similar version for that for Centennial Mill, only there what the public benefit will be is enhanced greenway. Second, we did increase heights along the expansion of the light rail corridor all the way down to Lincoln Street and that new station. So we're building on that principle that we've always had of greater intensity of development along the light rail line. We propose decrease heights along the north and west edges of Chinatown, but increase it on a particular set of blocks within Chinatown. I'm going to talk about that in more detail next. And finally, the plan proposes to increase heights at the bridgeheads. So let's take a look.
If you could just go back to that. What's the rationale for that? Because when you look at the whole waterfront in that section, it seems like there's going to be just those two major bumps.
Well, Commissioner, we're going to get to illustrations in a moment, and I'll return to that question, I promise.
Okay.
But first, the first one of these, we're going to talk about Chinatown, and we're going to talk about the bridgeheads. In Chinatown, the height discussion there centered on the blocks between Cooch and Everett along 4th. So they're shown here in the red square. As I said already, and if you remember that picture of the 88 plan, there was that big red swath that sort of swept up from the central city and went up the transit mall across the steel bridge and over into the Lloyd District. That was assumed to be an extension of our commercial core. What we've now done in this plan is rethought what our expectations are for the area north of Burnside and lowered those heights along Gleason, lowered them along 5th. But within Chinatown itself, it's a historic district and one where we focused a good deal of attention on trying to incentivize development to help add to the districts in a way that improves its economic viability. And the plan proposes to explore for these three blocks increasing the base height from 100 to 150. The principle is, though, to access that additional height, you would need to transfer it off of historic properties within Chinatown. And part of the reason why we think this is viable is that you can shift the height to different parts of the site. So just some illustrations. That block 33, that blue site there, that's between the Goldsmith buildings and the PDC offices along 5th and 4th. It's a full surface parking lot now. And our proposal, or today, at 100 feet and the amount of floor area you could build there, it's demonstrating that principle. You could fill the whole block up. What we're proposing is to consider greater heights, especially on the transit mall side, and a step down along the 4th Avenue side to be able to possibly create a greater incentive for infill development there. And when you look at it from the street level, that's what the sort of current entitlements might look like massing-wise, and here's how you can use the ability to shift height from one part of a site to another to maybe get it to fit into the district better. And as I said, all of this is contingent on a transfer, so it transfers some of the value to existing historic properties. Second, bridgehead, and this is what Commissioner Fritz was asking about, was Morrison Bridgehead and farther down the Hawthorne Bridgehead. Here the principle was looking at these sites, especially the sites here that are shown in blue are surface lots or underdeveloped parcels today. And as part of wanting to bring more activity to the waterfront on a day-to-day basis, the redevelopment of and the more intense development of sites along NATO was thought to be something we should try to aspire to. And we thought additional height in these targeted locations could contribute to the ability to do that. And also there's this premise that these are where the bridges enter the west side. So if you were looking at the pulses of height along our waterfront, We're still maintaining a step down. It's just that we're allowing more height there. The pulses correspond to these gateways into the central city as well. So today, the height all along that section is 75 feet. So and the blocks we're talking about are bookmarked between Yamhill Historic District and Old Town Historic District. We're proposing on those set of blocks around the ramps to bump up the height to 250, another step behind it to slightly higher, and then it steps up to what it is today in the commercial core, 460 feet.
Is it envisioned that the off ramps would be moved?
Well, and see, that's part of why we're even creating this option, Commissioner, is this next slide Carl's showing is, just showing the massing. This isn't really architecture. It's really hard to develop those sites with the ramps on them. Conceivably, someone could, but it would be unlikely that they would hit this scale if the ramps are still there. Also, though, those ramps are very important, especially for access onto the freeway for the central east side. So that's a sort of ongoing debate that we're going to be studying as we complete the plan. This just creates the possibility of possibly affording to relocate, making it worthwhile to reconsider the configuration of one of those or both of those ramps and be able to pay for it. The other thing about this, and this goes to a point that the Planning and Sustainability Commission made very strongly, is that additional height here would be tied to a bonus. So you'd have to give something to get it, and as a waterfront location, it might have some particular value that can contribute to the affordable housing aspects of the bonus.
Are you going to go into more detail about the heights in Old Town, slide 21?
We can come back to it, Commissioner. That was all I had on Old Town.
You talked about the difference between the 100 feet and 150, but it looked like there's some other changes as well to 250.
Oh, yeah. You want to go back to that, Carl?
Yes, that one. So you've got the 100 to the 150, but then there's this corner little block, which is currently 130, which is going up to 250.
Well,
and then the 250 going to 325.
So today the block is 250, and what we're proposing in that hashed area that's on either side of the Chinese Garden, that's what the green spot is. We're taking another examination of if our step down to that important public place is adequate to protect light and air of the Chinese Garden. So what we're saying there is we're going to come back in with a step down around the Chinese Garden to accomplish that objective.
And then we're on the block where it says 130.
Right. So if I could jump in. So what we're doing there is actually that would change to 250. And so you have a transition from the office core of 460 to 250 for a half block and then right down into the 75 feet in Skidmore Historic District. So that's what you're seeing on the proposal. And that's really directly in response to many years, really, of conversations with folks on the Historic Landmarks Commission, from which we took the premise that it's less important to step down to the edge of the historic district than it is to maintain an absolutely uniform height at a low level within the historic district. If you remember back a few years ago, I don't know if you do, but we talked about looking at increasing heights at some surface parking lot sites at the edge of, but within the historic district, and that was very unpopular with the Historic Preservation Committee and the Landmarks Commission. And instead, what they asked us to do was say, really outside that historic district boundary, it's much less important to us what happens there. And a stark transition is okay. We actually want to see the place feel very distinctively different once you enter the historic district. So that's responding to that idea.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that's the two height proposals I wanted to feature, but I want to talk about two neighborhood as well, where we've gotten a lot of testimony, the West End. We are not proposing any height changes to the West End, which are 250 feet today, pretty much south of Salmon, and 325 with bonuses to the north. The West End is built out, and you can see it in this illustration, with a mix of smaller and taller, older and new buildings. It's the location of some very successful residential infill, such as the Elliott Tower. It has a large number of landmark properties which are protected with a demolition review that make sort of redevelopment or the height on those properties somewhat less relevant, and that's what's shown here in the black dots. There's probably more historic landmark eligible properties in the district, but that's just what's designated today. The plan does not propose to change heights, but it does carry in that reexamination of how we get to the heights that are in the district, and we're looking at the same approach that we would talk about in the Pearl, where you can transfer off of a shorter building to get to the heights that that you want, thereby creating some economic incentive to preserve some of the character buildings. The second district I wanted to talk about, but actually back to the Goose Hollow too, and what you're looking at there too is the darker red buildings today are over 100 feet, and the rest are below 100 feet. So
those
just
are existing buildings.
Those are existing buildings. So it's that place, and that's part of its character today. Goose Hollow, again, where no height changes are proposed. We spent a good deal of time talking about the area called the Flats, which is along the light rail line on the northeast corner of Goose Hollow. And there, today, heights are up to 250 feet, I believe, more with bonuses, and up to 75 feet more with bonuses. Also, there's a certain greater heights along Burnside. And you get to the south side of the district, it's 100 feet base plus another 75 feet if you're able to get to the bonuses. And that's predominantly more residential and character on the south side of that district. Next.
Yes.
Oh, and then the other thing that you see here on this slide are those dots with the arrows. One of the things, as I said, when we come back to you with the fine-grained height map, we are going to show you the view quarters and how that impacts these particular areas. And we're undergoing a new analysis of all the view quarters, and we're possibly going to be recommending at consideration of additional view quarters. So even though we're talking in sort of broad swaths about the heights in this district, it's going to be carved up, it's going to be refined by where we put in those view quarters. And you can see that if we were in at least sort of along the southern section there today, that's when you put a view quarter in, what it does to the height map. Same thing's true about the area south along the extension of the transit line. There's a lot of view quarters in there. Okay, two more issues. Affordable housing. The Portland plan set a goal of having the 15% of the affordable housing stock having 15% of the housing stock affordable citywide. And currently, over 30% of the housing in the central city is affordable at the 80% median family income or less. So the PSC set a very ambitious goal that in 2035, we're still going to have 30% of the housing in the central city affordable to 80% MFI or less households. The current city strategy targets affordable housing around opportunity areas, and the notion is that some of our neighborhoods are rich in transit, they're rich in good schools, they're rich in these things that if for affordable housing residents adds to likelihood of success and lowers their costs. And the Planning Commission sort of focused in on the fact that between the concentration of jobs, and not just the concentration of jobs in general, but the concentration of sort of working class jobs in the central city, concentration of transit, this is a great place to have affordable housing to save households money. So they want to set a more ambitious goal there than they have in the rest of the city. And then finally, environmental issues were discussed a great deal at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and we worked on them closely with Commissioner Houck and with Bob Salinger from the Audubon. And came up at the end of the day with a package that was soundly supported by both of those and by the PSC. In reviewing the plan, we identified two things that we failed to get into the plan. So there is an amendment that we circulated to you today, and we're acknowledging that we have a central citywide target for riverbank enhancement of 12,600 linear feet. And that we have a central citywide target for riverbank restoration sites of at least two or three sites. So with that, we believe that the environmental package is the package that the Planning and Sustainability Commission fully endorsed. So as Susan said, we're finishing up the quadrant plans. We're going to then run into writing up the code and bringing all that back to you as the final Central City 2035 plan and implementing code. And with that, I think we're done. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions at the outset for staff? Obviously, there may be many more along the way, but
after you, Commissioner.
Thank you. One of the things that you didn't mention is the proposal to cap 405, and I see that as an action item. I'm wondering, and I'm interested to hear from the community, as to how much of a priority that really is in comparison with the other things. I'm going to need time after today's hearing, and I really appreciate the mayor saying that we're not going to be voting today or take more testimony and such. This is a very important plan. I want to take a lot of time to go through it. I'm going to be checking through all of the items that Portland Parks and Recreation is designated as the lead on for the next 2 to 5 years to see, can we feasibly do that in our work plan? Because it's very important to me that we not promise things that actually we're not going to be able to do. So I'd like to hear how much discussion there was of capping 405 as an example.
Okay, on the capping of 405, there was a good deal of discussion, the premise this time that maybe is distinction from how we've talked about it in the past is it was talked about in sort of a very strategic kind of intervention around a few locations on the 405, primarily often in association with a possible redevelopment at Lincoln High School, if that ever comes to be. But what we discovered when we did the Northeast Quadrant was even ODOT was acknowledging at Broadway and Widler, the most cost-effective solution for them to cover up that trench and to do the changes that they want to do to the freeway was to cap it there, basically. So it seems extraordinary. This is a notion that it could make a big difference for reading the continuity of the central city across the 405 if and when we get to reconstruction of those ramps or reconstruction of those parts of the freeway. We wanted to keep it, the community really wanted to keep it on the table as an option that was considered.
So that is something that I noticed we have reporters covering. I'd be interested to hear from folks in the rest of the city. Is that a priority for use of our asks to the federal and state governments? So that's one thing I'm interested in. Another that I'd like to hear community comment on is about choosing Jefferson Street rather than Burnside as the main street from the West End to Goose Hollow. Interested in that. The specifics in some of the zoning proposals we just got done with discussing Block 7, and I see there's a rezoning of the block west of Providence Park to CXD. Wondering how much community conversation there has been about that. So I won't go into all of my detailed concerns. I am, however, overall concerned about the relationship to the river and in the policy for that. There isn't the specific language that was directed when we had the concept plan discussion, which was in the resolution, about the step down to the river. And so I, again, want to hear community comments about that.
About height and bulk, building step down, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's in the current comprehensive plan that we have a principle of step down to the river. When you're walking along NATO, it's very clear that we've followed that nicely, and you get the sense of a broad open space and a gradual ramp up to the transit mall, for example. So I want to make sure that that's not lost. And one of the reasons I'm mentioning that now is that this was discussed when we had the hearing in October of 2012, but because it wasn't in the documented concept plan at that time, the specific language wasn't added to the concept plan. It was added to the resolution, it's not then captured in this document. So I want to make sure when we come back for the comprehensive plan, I see a solid policy with that in it.
Okay. Good. Other questions, things to flag? Commissioner Frisch?
Thank you, Mayor. Joe, a slide that you showed us earlier really got my attention in the briefing and tonight, and that's 2035, 30% of all the housing affordable to people making 0 to 80% of median family income. And just to put that in context, at 60% of median family income, we're talking about people who make $29,000 a year single, and we're talking about families of four that make $42,000. I think the MFI stuff always seems like an abstraction, so I try to put the face on it. And you can then extrapolate who are the workers and people in our community that need housing that is targeted them. This will not be the first time the council adopts a grand vision with a commitment that is as bold as that. And the last time we had this conversation was courtesy of the mayor and the housing commissioner. We talked about northeast Portland. And we talked about the Albina plan, and a generation later, a whole community displaced. And we talked about a huge deficit in affordable housing. So I previewed this question to you before the hearing because I was sincerely interested in getting your response. But why are you confident in this plan? that we can reach these lofty goals? And in addition, what does this council have to do to make sure that we reach those goals?
So even when we discussed this at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, Commissioner, I think we all acknowledge that the means, that how you get to that goal, we had not figured out. It wasn't sort of, you're not going to find it in that plan. We're working on things like bonuses, but bringing more resources to the table clearly is probably a core part of that, of the ability to do that. Because what we're talking about is over the next 20 years, 6,900 more units, affordable units in the sub, if we get our 23,000. So that's a lot. That's more than we produce today on a regular basis. So it's a resource question in part. And so the commission thought that especially for working poor households, the Central City is a great location to be able to be housed, to be able to live, because it saves you a lot of money. It offers a lot of opportunities. So they wanted to mark the distinction of how important they thought it was to include in the Central City. They wanted to mark the distinction that today it's almost 35% of the households in the Central City are affordable at that level. So we're staying the path, but the specific means were not identified. It's an aspirational big challenge, and I'm sure Commissioner Baugh is going to talk about that too.
So what I would really appreciate as we go through this is that you help us be as prescriptive as possible about what it's going to mean. Commissioner Saltzman has put this voluntary bonus plan for affordable housing on the table. We applaud him for doing so, but that's going to be a market-based tool. The council has put in its legislative agenda lifting the preemption on inclusionary zoning. That's a tool, but it doesn't solve the problem. We have some TIF, but the tax increment financing dollars are a declining resource. Short of a miracle, we're not going to get more money from the federal government. And so we've got this great big goal, and if we get it right, it's going to go to the question that Dan posed at the beginning about what kind of city we're going to look like in a generation. So it's really big. Mm-hmm. I think it's safe to say that prior councils have had those good intentions of getting this right, but we've fallen a little short, sometimes for reasons beyond our control, and sometimes because it's just very hard when you're swinging for the fences. And on this plan, I really urge you to be as prescriptive as possible and to lay out for us on a regular basis how we do a check-in and how we measure success. And towards that end, I went back and reread the no net loss policy that the council adopted in 2001. And it's like a walk down memory lane because Dan Saltzman and Eric Sten brought it forward and the mayor voted for it. And it was a wonderful document saying we're going to protect housing in the West, in downtown, but particularly in the West End. One of the things it said was we've got to make sure we preserve 705 units of Section 8 expiring use properties that are at risk. This council preserved every goddamn one of them. Mm-hmm. And it was laid out in a document that these two guys put out there and set as a goal, and we did it. And that is something to be applauded, but it doesn't always happen, despite best intentions. So I urge you to be as prescriptive as possible and focused about what action items we have to take to get there, because the goal is smashing. And along that way, I want to offer just two other observations. We ought to have the debate about whether 80% is where the need is or whether we should cap it at 60%. The no net loss policy said our most urgent need is 0 to 60%. If we're going to lift the ceiling, let's have that debate, and let's debate it on the basis of a needs assessment, not on the basis of just conjecture. What's the need? And the second thing I want to just offer as an observation, you have a lot of action plans in this plan. We could spend an entire day discussing which action item should get the star first and be the first year, year 2 through 5, and that's obviously not a science. We're gonna talk that through. But I'll give you one example where I see a potential values proposition we ought to debate at some point. In the West End implementation plan for housing in neighborhoods, And the West End was the centerpiece of the no net loss policy because we used to have a lot of hotels there that had very low income people and vulnerable properties. You've prioritized creating incentives for the development of family housing over preserving existing affordable housing. I don't know whether that's right. We know that a family housing is more expensive. I'm not sure whether that's where families would choose to live if they had other options. I don't know that. You might. But you might argue that in year one, we ought to focus on preserving what we have, because the one thing I think we're all concerned about this plan is that it's going to stimulate development and market forces, and we know from history that market forces displace poor people. So I would think that preservation, quantifying at-risk building and preserving, ought to come ahead of building family housing, absent some evidence that the family housing market there is robust and we can do it. I might want to preserve what we have because I suspect there's going to be a lot of pressure on the existing stock of affordable housing. And we know it takes an enormous focus to preserve vulnerable properties. And that's embedded throughout. There's 0 to 80 and family housing prioritized ahead of other kinds of housing. I just think that's an important debate, and I hope we can have it, because I think we might want to retweak that one. But my big plea is, if we're going to do something different here, we have limited tools at the back end to fix problems. We have the opportunity to get this right and have a downtown unlike any other downtown, but we've got to have clear metrics. We have to have clear goals. And the council has to say at the front end, this is not something where in 2035 we're going to have a future council say, gosh, sorry, we missed this opportunity. We want to be here in 2035 and say we kept our promise. And we need you to keep us on track.
Good point. Thank you very much. Other points or questions at this juncture?
I have one big, vague question, which is there any relationship between the decisions we make about building heights and our goals around climate action? Will any of those height-related decisions have any impact at all on our climate actions and goals?
In the broad sense, yes, because by having more population near transit and able to take transit, we'll reduce transportation. Transportation is 40% of our carbon emissions. In terms of new construction versus old, there's a debate. But in general, people living in smaller spaces in more densely arranged buildings, multifamily versus living in single family spread out, are going to use a lot less energy.
Good. Great. Thank you all very much. I'm sure we'll have more.
Excuse me, Mayor. Commissioner Bailey.
Yes, I'm going to call Commissioner Bailey next, and then our two representatives of the PSC. So Commissioner Jules Bailey is here on behalf of Multnomah County. Welcome.
Mayor, he's been waiting so long, he grew a beard.
Not that long yet. Did go a little gray, though, in the...
Just wait. We've been in this job for a while.
Yeah.
You have to make that comment with five middle-aged people sitting up there doing gray.
Touché. Well, thank you, Mayor and Council, for getting me in here and allowing me to get back for the Home for Everyone Coordinating Board that I know is a priority for you all as well. For the record, my name is Jules Bailey, and I'm here today in support of the West Quadrant Plan and many of the planning goals and the policy objectives that were developed during this process. As you know, Multnomah County Chair Kafori and I submitted a letter that largely mirrors my comments today, so you have the substantive part of my message before you in writing. Portland's West Side is a vibrant mix of housing, high-rise office space, innovative transit options, entertainment and art venues, public spaces, and parks. And unlike many other cities in the United States, Portland and the metro region have focused our growth inward. We believe that many of the successes of our urban area are due to this purposeful planning, and we support the added focus that the West Quadrant Plan will bring to this area. And I think as an illustration, one only need to look at my district in Multnomah County, District 1, to see the effect of some of our land use policies. My district includes the west side of Multnomah County as well as some of Inner East Side, And our urban growth boundary has helped to keep farmlands in the rural areas of my district productive and still farming. And the urban area is growing dense and up and accommodating a mix of infill and urban green spaces to keep the city vibrant and livable. These choices, and they have been choices, have gotten us here, and they have been deliberate. And as we approach now another decision point, we have an opportunity to think for the future once again and for generations of Portlanders to come. And I have to add, as an urban planning geek, this is a really exciting time. Multnomah County shares the city's goal for this area of Portland, to be a healthy, thriving, and sustainable community that provides family wage jobs, affordable housing, and recreation areas for all members of our community. And I come to you with two particular lenses beyond that conceptual continuation of our forward-thinking land use planning policies in the urban growth boundary. First, around housing more people in the core. We support the plan's goals to allow for needed future residential development capacity for all income levels. As I mentioned, the Home for Everyone Executive Committee, which is a partnership between the cities of Portland and Gresham, Multnomah County, Home Forward, and Meyer Memorial Trust, is committed to providing an urgent and coordinated response to ending homelessness in our city and region. Our region's low vacancy rate, increasing rents, and lack of tools to increase the supply of affordable housing makes this work extremely difficult, as you know. Not only is downtown an attractive place to build a wide range of housing options, it is also a great place to wrap around those kinds of housing support services that we need to support families and individuals. In addition, Multnomah County owns many public buildings and provides many public services in this project area, and we also receive property taxes from private property in the area. We are working on the site selection for a new and much-needed courthouse and are developing a new health department headquarters that can meet the demands of modernized public health. Both of these buildings will be in the West Quadrant for multiple reasons, but buildability and the access to transportation and other amenities are some of the paramount criteria as we look at developing those projects. So in short, we support the plan's goals for population density and maintaining or increasing as appropriate building height. And as we grow as a region over the coming decades, we know that well-designed, dense, mixed-use urban communities can promote livability, reduce transportation and housing costs, improve equity, and make our streets safer. And to Commissioner Novick's earlier point, they are also fundamental to our climate responsibilities. After the plan is adopted, Multnomah County looks forward to collaborating with the city on city-county priorities in the plan related to transportation, public safety, emergency management, housing and homelessness, and sustainability. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your cooperation and coordination with what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Commissioner, before we lose you, do you have a quick update on the status of the new health department building and a timeline for development?
Commissioner, I unfortunately don't have that for you right now, but I would be happy. My staff is here, and we'll make sure that you get that update immediately.
The other piece that's buried in this plan is Multnomah County has asked for some additional height at the location that the city has made available, Block U2.
Mm-hmm.
And could we also get some clarity about why the additional height is necessary?
Absolutely. I'll make sure that happens.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, then let's call our two volunteer leaders here, Mr. Baugh, Ms. Schultz, come on up. Thank you both.
Where are you going?
You can keep playing musical chairs for as long as you like.
I think we all want to get on with it.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Catherine Schultz. As a co-chair on the West Quadrant Stakeholders Advisory Committee, or SAC, and the Vice Chair on the Planning and Sustainability Commission, or PSC, I've had the privilege to be deeply involved in the evolution of this plan for the last couple of years. You'll likely hear testimony about the SAC process, so I'd like to provide a little bit of background on that. The SAC was comprised of a diverse group of 33 individuals selected by an application process. In addition, there are many individuals who are not formally on the SAC, but attended every single meeting, and participated by testifying at every single meeting. They all, both the SAC members and those people who came to all of our meetings, dedicate a significant amount of time to the creation of this plan. The SAC process began with the challenge for Mayor Hales to think big and as Joe outlined, we did. The work evolved throughout four phases. We began with a generation of ideas and issues, and then we moved into conceptual development for the entire West Quadrant and on to plan development for the districts within the West Quadrant. We concluded with developing the goals, policies, and actions that are needed to support the plan. A majority of the SAC supported the plan, but there was not unanimous consensus on all parts of it. Therefore, the SAC agreed to move the plan forward to the PSC with a minority report, which outlined environmental and building height issues that remained a concern for some of the individuals. And I'll address those next. Regarding the environmental concerns, several members of the SAC did not feel that the plan went far enough in protecting and improving our natural resources. This was echoed at the PSC, and it resulted in strengthening of the language around protection of natural resources through higher standards for many items, including green infrastructure, development within the floodplain, and tree canopy targets. Regarding building heights, you will hear negative testimony regarding building heights. It should be noted that both the SAC and the PSC listened to thoughtful testimony that led to extensive, informed, meaningful discussions on building height, and both bodies arrived at the exact same conclusion. Throughout both the SAC and the PSC deliberations, there were three targeted areas of discussion. Joe outlined them: Old Town Chinatown, the bridgeheads, and West End. I think it should be noted that there was little to no discussion of the building heights at Goose Hollow during the SAC process. In Old Town Chinatown, there was support for greater height on the three designated blocks. It was agreed that this is necessary to finally get a very catalytic project moving forward in the district that desperately needs it. That being said, the support came with the caveat that design guidelines for the district be developed and adopted to ensure that the character of the neighborhood is preserved. At the bridgehead, Portland has a long-standing policy of stepping down to the river, so reaction to the idea of taller buildings at the bridgehead kind of raised people's eyebrows. But throughout discussion and deliberation, it was recognized that allowing taller buildings at the bridgeheads will increase the development flexibility in those very hard-to-develop sites, and development on these sites will address numerous plan goals of goals, policy, and actions that call for kind of a renewed participation along the Willamette River Greenway. There are very few opportunity sites left within kind of the central and south end of Nido Avenue that allow people to live along our river. And people living along our river's edge will create 24/7 activation. By encouraging development at the bridgeheads, we can increase the potential of this activation happening. Finally, at the West End, this plan does not change building heights at the West End. There was much testimony and debate on the request by some members of the West End community to reduce the building heights at the West End, but both the SAC and the PSC supported not changing the heights. The West End is ideally located in the heart of downtown with excellent access to transportation, jobs, schools, and groceries. Decreasing heights would have an effect on this potential density, which goes directly against our comprehensive plan goals of supporting and increasing growth around centers that have the infrastructure to support greater density. Aside from these few but important concerns, there was much support, enthusiasm, and agreement for most of the plan. Some highlights of our agreement include activating the Willamette Riverway with a 21st century urban riverfront, embracing zoning tools that increase flexibility and allow more mixing of office, retail, residential within districts as well as buildings. As an architect, I can tell you that while this concept seems pretty basic here in Portland, it's actually pretty revolutionary to many cities and towns. Other areas of agreement include designing our streets with more intention towards the activities that they need to support, creating the green loop that Joe talked about, a signature 10-mile walking and biking parkway, developing effective tools to accommodate growth while preserving historic, cultural, and environmental resources, ensuring that underrepresented and underserved populations have access to the benefits of our central city, and last but by no means least, reducing carbon emissions to reinforce our city's place as a model for low-carbon sustainable development. Commissioner Fritz, regarding the 405 capping, I think the SAC would say we all recognized it was extremely aspirational, but also in the locations that it was proposed, very important for connectivity within the central city to the other parts of the city on the other side of 405.
And did you discuss the issue that there isn't an infinite amount of money in WESH. If we did have additional transportation dollars, should they go to 405 or should they go to other transportation infrastructure elsewhere?
We did not necessarily the debate, you know, how to prioritize, no, at all, not at the SAC level. There's still some topic areas that need to be addressed in the plan, such as the Willamette Greenway, parking, bonus system. And this work will continue, and it will come together when we complete the Central City Plan. Therefore, the SAC recommends moving this plan forward with approval of the resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Andre Bob, Planning Sustainability Chair, Mayor, Council. Before you today, it's a major component of moving our Central City forward. What you will hear are policies of how